Up next, we're going to talk about some good trade news, some positive developments with the EU. We'll talk about that next here on AOA.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now back to Mike Adams.
Well, it's been a year where trade news, good trade news, positive trade news has been hard to come by. But we've had some, the deal with Japan, and also in recent days, the European Parliament voting to approve a plan granting the United States a country-specific share of the EU's duty-free high-quality beef quota. And want to talk about that now with an economist with the U.S. Meat Export Federation, Aaron Bohr. Aaron, thank you for joining us. Why is this such a positive step? What's the significance of this and the potential that it opens up for the U.S. Beef industry?
Right. Good morning. Yes, thanks, Mike. Well, it's a success on several fronts. And for one, I think for the more the trade policy side of it is that it's a success in granting the U.S. a dominant share of what we in the U.S. think of as our quota, so that the U.S. and Europe negotiated as kind of a terms of agreement on the long-standing hormones case. So instead of the U.S. retaliating on a bunch of miscellaneous European products, this agreement was meant to actually carve out a share of the European market at zero tariff for U.S. beef exports into Europe. But to meet WTO rules, this quota had to be open to every supplying country who met the high-quality definition. And eventually that led to Europe approving a number of other suppliers and then those suppliers undercutting our share of the quota. And so this uses WTO rules to actually allocate us a share of the quota based on historical performance. And what that means is that Europe is not increasing the total quota into Europe. It remains at 45,000 tons zero tariff, but now we get a U.S.-specific share of that starting at 18,500 metric tons and then increasing to 35,000 tons over 7 years. And so I know for some the tons don't mean a whole lot, but basically we're doing just under $200 million worth of U.S. beef to Europe annually right now. And that should increase to closer to $400 million by at least by 2025, and then increasing over to more than $500 million near 2030 or even earlier, depending on how fast you use up that quota. And so the market has sort of been capped for us, and as USMEF, we haven't really explored further into various markets within Europe because we just haven't been able to grow the quota operates on a quarterly basis, and these quarterly allocations currently are being utilized within the first couple of weeks. So it's a huge challenge for the entire chain and lining up EU-approved cattle, so NHTC, lining them up and then getting that beef produced for Europe and landing in the market just within the first couple of weeks of each quarter. And then having chilled product available year-round for those European users, chefs and retailers, it just has kind of been a nightmare. So this should allow room for growth and room for product to be landing in Europe weekly, rather than just the first couple of weeks of each quarter. And so for the producer, it should hopefully mean increased demand for NHTC cattle. You're looking at the potential to grow by about 25% within the first year, and then another 25% in the next year, which should be 2021. Because the quota jumps to 23,000 tons in year two, so that's yet another 25% increase, basically, in the availability of quota to ship into Europe in year two. And so it's opening further access into a niche market for U.S. beef. And to put that in further perspective, if we look at our top markets for chilled beef specifically, you're talking about Japan, about 150,000 tons, which will be growing because of the Japan agreement you mentioned earlier. The next show is about 120,000 tons, Canada about 70,000 tons, Korea 55,000 tons, Taiwan 25,000 tons, and Europe currently is about 15,000 tons of U.S. beef going, and that's going to grow again to 18,500 in year one and then eventually to 35,000 tons to for that quota potential. So you can see Europe placing in there behind Korea, still possibly edging ahead of Taiwan. When you think about the populations in those respective markets, with Europe at over 500 million wealthy, mostly wealthy people, it tells you there's still a lot more potential in that market if there was further access gains. Mm-hmm. But for now, it allows us to grow, again, in the niche and high-value market, because that is some fees from NHTC.
And the significance here is that has been such a tough market for us to get into because of their restrictions on hormones. And we know the history. There's a lot of baggage there. This kind of a breakthrough is significant given the headwinds we have faced for so long there, and doesn't resolve all trading issues between us, obviously, but does this give us then a foot in the door to maybe increasing sales even more into the European Union moving forward?
We hope so, certainly. That has to be the goal. And Europe's imports, not just from the U.S., but from all countries, are heavily restricted, due mainly to tariffs and quotas, as well as the SPF barriers, as we call them, or the no goods and no things at all allowed. And so everyone is under these same access conditions, but we will have the duty-free quota, which should help. There's pretty limited duty-free access outside of the duty-free quota, unless there's a little bit in various FTAs, but even in Europe's FTAs, they've been very restricted in what they've given. So Canada has CETA, and they have their own duty-free quotas through that, but have yet to really gain momentum there. So it will be interesting to see how the market develops. We also have the Mercosur agreement, which Europe gave about 99,000 tons to all four Mercosur countries. We talked to the South Americans, they say it's not even a meaningful trade volume. So Europe, you know, currently they're importing about 200,000 tons total of sold and frozen beef annually, and that's just 4% of their beef consumption, and that tracks very closely with the available quotas, and that's going to remain the case at this stage. But how much more can we carve out? Certainly getting beyond this quota, and then we can push up under our Hilton, which is 11,000 roughly tons at 20% tariff. There is that spillover opportunity to go further, but otherwise we're talking the need for a free trade agreement, and one that includes agriculture, which, as you know, has been the sticking point thus far in the sort of preliminary talks. And, you know, living through TTIP, it was also a major sticking point. But Europe's producers have lots of challenges, and if you go to Europe, you just hear over and over again how beef is destroying the planet. And so there's a huge campaign needed to reassure consumers in Europe generally that beef is not destroying the planet, and we are a sustainable product, and we have huge environmental benefits, actually, with the upcycling of ruminants and using cattle to, you know, manage grasslands. And so I see opportunities, hopefully, to turn the public back in favor of beef. We'll be a small part of that. But yeah, Europe's a tough market, but huge potential.
We're talking with Aaron Bohr, economist with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. And finally, Aaron, there has to be some optimism, I think, as we go into 2020 for our meat exports. You know, this year, if it's taught us anything, be ready for the unexpected, especially when it comes to trade. Things can blow up at any given moment, it seems like. But when you look at this deal with the EU, with Japan, China, we know there's a protein demand building there because of what's going on with African swine fever, and whether or not we get a deal or not, they're going to need to buy some to meet that demand. It looks like there's a lot of positive potential for even more export growth in 2020.
Absolutely, Mike. Yep. I mean, when we talked a month ago, I was super upbeat. I remain that way. Our forecasts right now are pretty cautious, calling exports in 2020 up 4-5%, but there's huge upside potential on top of that. I think we're even too conservative in our Japan estimates, and that alone would push us, you know, further in the range of 6-8% growth overall. And you hit on China. If there happens to be a phase one agreement, not going to gamble either way on that, but if there happens to be one, then that pushes the needle massively for U.S. beef export potential. And China is, it's just such a huge driver right now in the markets, and their October imports of beef from all suppliers were valued at $781 million. That's just the month of October. That was an 80% increase year on year. It's just pretty mind-blowing. And I was in Argentina week before last, and those, that country and many companies are shipping, you know, most of their production, if they're China approved, to China. And it's really just kind of mind-blowing what's happening as China pulls product from everywhere. And just overnight, China's GAC listed four more Argentine establishments and relisted some from Australia and New Zealand. And yes, their need for protein is huge. Their beef imports running January through October were $4.6 billion, up 51%. By far the top importer in the world, with obviously tremendous growth. And that's not, that growth was underway prior to African swine fever, but definitely the protein deficit is further, further running this demand for beef.
So let's, there's some hope there, some real potential, and seeing some positive things developing as far as our meat exports for 2020. Aaron Bohr, economist for U.S. Meat Export Federation, has been our guest. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks so much, Mike.
All right. So all in all, it's been a pretty good year this year for meat exports, given the trade issues. Hopefully even better year coming up next year. Stay with us on AOA.